The big news this week has been the Iowa Attorney General has weighed in. He is saying, in his opinion, that you are not able to pick a lieutenant governor. You have indicated that you plan to proceed in choosing a lieutenant governor. Do you have any concerns that this could be challenged in court?
Well, no, I've not said that yet, actually. What I've said, first of all, I was really disappointed in Attorney General Miller's reversal of his opinion. We asked our legal counsel in December, and he told our office that he concurred with the Secretary of State in our office that after doing research that that I would become the governor of the state of Iowa and I'd have the authority or to appoint a lieutenant governor. And so based on the information that we received in December, we've been moving forward with that. We've gone through the process. I've got a lot of great talent in the state of Iowa and a lot of interest. And so we've been interviewing individuals, and really I think Iowans believe that there should be a governor and a lieutenant governor. That's been the partner that since we changed the Constitution in 1988. And so I believe that Iowans believe that's the law also. And I actually served in the Iowa Senate in 2009 when unanimously a bill passed a Democratic-controlled Senate, a Democratic-controlled House, and signed by Governor Chet Colver. And so the intent of that was to clarify that if the lieutenant governor becomes governor, if the lieutenant governor's office becomes vacant, then the governor shall appoint, have the authority to appoint. So what I've said is, though, we still believe that the law is on our side, but based on the reversal of the opinion 5 months after the fact, we're going to evaluate what we've just been given, and we'll decide, you know, on what that path looks like going forward.
Do you think it's important for you to name the lieutenant governor?
Well, I absolutely do. I can tell you from my own experience, it's an unprecedented time that we're going through right now, and how blessed are we to have Governor Branstad being nominated to serve as the ambassador to China. He had his hearing today. It was unfortunate that they decided to hold this press conference the day before the governor's hearing on, you know, to become the next ambassador to China. And because the governor asked, when he asked me if I would be his running mate, he said, we're going to run as a team and serve as a team. And so I've been involved in all aspects of the executive branch, whether that is putting forth policy, leading initiatives. I've led trade missions. I've been in on the judicial appointments, just boards and commissions, all aspects. And so because of that, Iowans expect a seamless transition, a peaceful transition, and I feel very comfortable that we're going to be able to deliver that to Iowans. But again, I think they believe that we should have a governor and a lieutenant governor, and that was clear. And it should be part of the executive branch, and that was made clear, I think, when we changed the Constitution in 1988.
You talk about how you and the governor have been a team for the last 5 years that I have been in Iowa. I can rarely think of a public event where you have not been by his side. Are there times that you have respectfully disagreed with the governor?
Well, yeah, and you know, I'm looking for that same type. I want an individual that is compatible and that's an idea person, that's, you know, thinks outside of the box and looks for ways that we can do something different. And I want somebody that philosophically aligns with me, but is not afraid to say, well, I think we should maybe, what about this? Or how about this individual? And that's what I've had the good fortune. That's the kind of relationship that Governor Branstad and I have had, and I want to continue that same type of partnership.
What's an example of when you and the governor disagreed?
Well, you know, the great opportunity when you have somebody that gives you the opportunity to do that is if you do disagree, we do it in a closed environment where we can have a healthy discussion.
You're not going to tip your hand?
And he's still the governor, and so, you know, he's the governor, and I respect that. But I have every opportunity to weigh in, to make my case. We agree almost, you know, a lot, but we've come down on some different sides on judicial appointments is one example where I would have maybe gone a different direction than the governor, and I've had the opportunity to say why and to talk, to make my case, and so I appreciate that very much. And I can tell you that I'm very involved in the National Lieutenant Governors Association and very involved with my colleagues, and that's not typical to have a governor that's really embraced, I think, the lieutenant governor and allowed them to be encouraged. I don't know if allowed is the right word, really encouraged them to be a full partner. And so I think that says a lot about, you know, Governor Branstad and who he is as an individual.
So what have some of the judicial disagreements been?
No, it's just on the appointments. So it's just, I mean, that's personal, but, you know, because that's not fair to the candidates. But the committee presents us with names, and then we do interviews, and then we make the selection. And so there's been a couple times where we maybe went different directions, but ultimately it's his choice. But I have the opportunity to weigh in on that.
We just finished a legislative session where a lot of things changed for public sector workers. Bargaining rights have been scaled back for public sector unions. Minimum wage capping so that local counties can't set higher minimum wages. Making it harder for injured workers to claim workers' compensation. There were public hearings that I attended where everyday working Iowans sat down at a hearing and said to Republican lawmakers, I did not vote for you to do this to me. What do you say to those Republican workers that feel that they had rights taken away from them for their providing for their families?
You know, there's two ways to look at that, and that was kind of leading in the way that you asked the question. So, you know, these individuals were elected to implement bold change, and they went out and they made their case to Iowans, and there was six Democrat incumbents were replaced. And so that says to me that Iowans thought we need to take things in a different direction. And, you know, when you look at the collective bargaining law, that hadn't been reviewed in many, many years. And so it was an opportunity to review it, to modernize it, to bring taxpayers to the table, to, you know, continue to. We're grateful for our state employees. We couldn't serve Iowans without the great work that state employees do. And but we need to bring it more in line with what the private sector is. And healthcare is probably the biggest change. They're going to continue to have a great healthcare plan. They're going to continue to have great coverage. But, you know, I don't know what it's going to look like because it's still in negotiation, but they might have to pay a little bit more towards their healthcare. And that's what everyday Iowans are facing every single day. You know, we've got a healthcare system. The cost of healthcare is escalating. Premiums are going up. Deductibles are going up. I've also talked to families across this state that they have a card, but they can't use it. And so we have to balance all of that. And I think really what it allows, I come from local government, and it allows our schools and our local governments and the state to really better manage their resources. And that's important. We can't continue to we have to live within our means, just like Iowans do every day.
The education budget for K through 12 schools, there was an increase that was in that budget.
Right.
Educators largely have said that it wasn't enough. They're saying that it'll lead to larger classrooms, just more work on teachers. There has also been talk about in the next legislative session, maybe looking at more school voucher or what's called school choice programs. Do you support giving state funding to private schools, even if it means less money for public schools?
Well, first of all, let's back up.
Okay.
So, you know, we had to start off the legislative session doing a $118 million de-appropriation because for the last four times that the REC has met, they've reduced the amount of revenue, and we have an obligation by statute to put forth a balanced budget. And so with a very tough budget and with revenue that had been reduced four times and with the decline in the, you know, with ag economy the way that it's been, it has an impact on all sectors of our economy and the state budget. So what we did, we didn't do a 10% across the board cut like Governor Culver did, and we did targeted cuts, and we exempted K-12, and we exempted property tax backfill and Medicaid. And so, you know, the school districts were very fortunate that they didn't I mean, that was decimated. I mean, that decimated them when Culver did a 10% across the board cut. And the local governments. I was there. They'd been promised that money, and they had built their budgets on that. So we didn't do that. We exempted them. And then in a budget where most of our state agencies have seen reductions, we put $40 million into the budget for 2018. And so they got an increase. And, you know, we have put more money into education than at any other time in this state history. Over $3.2 billion of a $7 billion budget goes to K-12 education. And so, you know, it's not about how much money, it's about how you spend that money. And so with teacher leadership, that's $150 million of new money that went into education. We put that rolled into the school formula so that they wouldn't, you know, lose it. It wasn't a one time. We wanted to make sure that they had continuity in that revenue. And so we put it in the school funding formula. And we're seeing great results from that. The educators love the collaboration. They love the fact that we can, they can take on additional responsibility and earn additional dollars. And so by really emulating the best teachers in the school districts and having them help get in front of the teachers. So, and the other thing is, honestly, with the Chapter 20 reform, that'll give those school districts the opportunity to better manage those resources. So they'll be making the decisions on how they manage the resources that they have.
When you say educators are loving the reform, are you referencing I know it's not the teachers' unions that are saying this, but
I think they would say that the teacher leadership and compensation has been a huge success.
Okay.
They were part of it. We had them sitting around the table when we helped develop this. You know, we put together a plan early on, and we set a blueprint for, you know, world-class education, and we went out and we talked to Iowans, and there were a lot that weren't happy with some of the elements that were in that blueprint. And so we took it back, we adjusted to what we heard, we took it out to the public again, we made more adjustments. And so I think by the time we got to the final product in 2013, I think, we had a lot of consensus and we had a lot of buy-in, and it wasn't a mandate, but we have every single school district participating. Teachers love it. Administrators love it. I mean, and we're seeing results. So it's transforming, I think, the way that we educate our children. And then STEM has been a good component of that also. And hopefully the Future Ready Iowa will be the next piece that we'll build onto that.
So I apologize. You were referencing the teacher leadership program more so than the funding on that. And you bring up STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math. This is something that you have been talking about for a very long time.
I'm passionate about it.
One thing that I'm curious about in these kinds of jobs, science, technology, engineering, and math, take a lot of advanced schooling. Tuition is going to be going up. No?
No.
No?
No. A certification. Math is involved in everything. If you look at the manufacturing floors today, if you look at the trades, an apprenticeship program, everything involves math. And so there are, in STEM, technology and math, computer science degrees. I'll give you an example. We were out at Shazam a while back on one of our Future Ready Iowa tours, and they have a partnership with DMAC. And the students that are participating in this program, the first year of their the two-year program, they do an internship with Shazam. They earn $18 an hour during the internship. Probably 90%+ of the students that participate end up being hired by Shazam after the second year, and the average salary that those individuals make is about $86,000 to $89,000 a year. And so that's a two-year program that there's very little debt because of the internship component. They're actually earning while they're learning, and I can give you multiple examples of that. So I tell kids when I'm talking to them, whether it's a certification, a two-year degree, four-year degree, or a PhD, science, technology, engineering, and math, or those components are really important to you picking the door or the career that you want. But if you have that foundation, then you can be or do anything that you want to be. And the better prepared that we and the opportunities that we offer our students sooner rather than later, We have less remediation. That reduces cost. We're doing pre-apprenticeships. That reduces the time for them to, again, have a phenomenal career with no very minimal debt. So there's a lot of things that we're doing that better prepares our students, helps them look at the options and figure out what they like and don't like. That's another big advantage, and I think Waukee Apex is a great example of that. So we'll have students say, I thought this is what I wanted to do. I got an opportunity to do it, and not what I like. And so that helps, I think, reduce the cost, too, moving forward.
But do you have concerns that tuitions are going to be going up for the Regents universities as a result of the budget this year?
Well, you know, we'll have to watch it. We had 2.5 years where we had no increase in tuition at all, and it had been years since that had happened. But the other thing, you know, when our kids were in school, that's when we saw double-digit increases in higher education. And that's hard for families when you're looking at increases of increasing the tuition of that magnitude. And so we want to continue to look for ways that we can make sure kids are prepared so they're not having to take remediation, to look for ways that we can increase dual enrollment. We lead the nation, by the way, in the number of kids that take community college classes while they're in high school. And so that's another way to reduce the cost of college. And the real benefit of that is that they have a higher completion rate. So they have a higher they have a better chance of succeeding and completing, which is important too.
Shifting to another topic that was discussed quite a bit during this past legislative session, and that is abortion restrictions.
Yep.
The bill that passed banned abortions at 20 weeks. It
yep.
doesn't include exception for rape, incest, or
yep.
Fatal fetal conditions. Do you think these exceptions should be included?
Well, you know, first of all, I'm proud of the pro-life community. We had all of the groups really come together this year and in collaboration, and I think that, you know, that was the right thing to do. They were working for a life at conception bill, and they weren't able to get that done, but were able to at least, protect life by implementing the 20-week ban. So,
did you support the personhood bill?
You know, I believe that life begins at conception, but I'm in favor of support of saving babies and life, and so this is what they were able to do this year, and we'll continue to work with legislators to, see if we can continue to advance the cause. But I'm glad that they were able to get something done this year, and so they did the 3-day notice and the sonogram and the 20-week ban. And the majority of Iowans, I think, and Americans believe that at 20 weeks, abortion is unconscionable.
Further restrictions, maybe in 2018, maybe ending telemed abortion. Is that something
that
you?
I've got a lot of time to lay out what I'm going to be working on, and I've been consistent in saying that. I'm going to spend my summer traveling the state and talking to Iowans and listening to Iowans, and you get a lot of great ideas and a lot of good feedback when you get out in the state. That's really has been instrumental in us putting our program and our policies together, because if you can get out there and talk to Iowans and get in communities and, see the things that are working in areas where maybe the state or regulation or legislation is a barrier, it really helps us in addressing what we need to do moving forward. And so it's a great opportunity to do that, and I'm going to take advantage of that.
One of the things I'm sure you'll be taking a look at is water quality.
Yep.
That's something that was talked about a lot this session, ultimately did not go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
What needs to be done to clean up Iowa's waterways?
Well, we've got the right strategy in place with the nutrient reduction strategy, so I believe that's the path that we need to go. We just need to find a dedicated and sustainable and growing revenue source so that we can support best practices that are providing the results that we're looking for. So, it passed both houses. I know they're continuing to work and will over the interim to see if they can figure out what that compromise looks like. But there's the majority of the legislators want to do something. It's just working through, I think, the logistics of what that looks like and where the funding comes from. So it didn't help that we had, such a tough budget year and really limited resources. And so We're trying to figure out ways that we can fund water quality and have it be a dedicated and growing revenue source so that we can scale the programs that are working and get the results that we're looking for.
Would you say that there's a water crisis in Iowa?
No, I mean, I think we need to continue to, you know, do what we can to make sure that we have, you know, a great quality of life, and water quality is part of that, and I think Iowans expect that, and so we need to continue to work with communities and farmers. I mean, every Iowan has a role to play in ensuring that we have great water quality in the state of Iowa, and we've got a lot of people that have that as a goal and that are working on that.
There are a lot of people at the Leopold Center right now that are waiting to see what the governor is going to decide to do about funding for the sustainable agriculture program there at the Leopold Center. Do you think it should be closed?
Well, we're reviewing that right now. We've got our policy team that is reviewing the bill, and we take into account individuals that we've heard from, Iowans that we've heard from, and so the governor and I will sit down in the next few weeks. I think we have until the 22nd to get the bill signed that were passed in the last 3 days of the legislative session. And so we're working through that process, and hopefully we'll have that decision soon.
Big picture, what's the biggest difference between Governor Branstad and the incoming Governor Reynolds?
Well, let me just start with where I can tell you where it's not going to change.
Well, I knew you'd do that.
Yeah, well, I think that's important. You know, the economy and working with Iowans and making sure that they have the skills to fill the jobs that are available today is going to continue to be a top priority of mine, because if we have to have a growing economy, and we need people staying in the state, our young people staying in the state, new people moving to the state, that's how we're going to keep our schools really vibrant and growing. If we've got an economy that's growing, then we have families that are moving in to the communities, and ultimately that's really how we're going to be able to support our schools and our educators. And so, you know, that's one thing that's going to stay consistent from Governor Branstad to myself. I'm proud of the progress that we've made over the last 6.5 years. I think this last legislative session continues to make us competitive. It's a very competitive environment out there, and so I think we've taken the next steps to help with that, and I'm looking forward to looking for additional ways that make Iowa stand out as a place to live, work, and to raise a family, and for businesses to say, that's where I want to locate my business.
You're not going to take a difference? You're not going to give me one?
Oh, well, no, I'm going to work on that. I'm working on Future Ready Iowa, and so that's really, really important. That's my biggest barrier right now. My biggest barrier to economic growth is workforce, and yet we have Iowans who are unemployed and underemployed, and so that's such a disconnect, and we need to figure out how we can find them and help them get the skills, have a support system in place that we don't yank away as they, you know, ascend up the career ladder, and then really connect them with a job. So connecting Iowans with opportunities is going to be a big goal of mine. And then, you know, we just need to make sure that we have connectivity across the state too, because if I'm going to ask the millennials and those young people to stay in the communities that they grew up in, then we need to have the connectivity that they expect to start a business, you know, to do the things that they expect to do. So that'll be a piece of it also.
If you were going to give a grade to the last legislative session, what would you give it?
Well, A, I think it was great. They ran on bold ideas. They ran on bringing taxpayers to the table. They talked about what they were going to do, and they got a lot of stuff done. And this is a historic legislative session, and I believe one that, you know, many years into the future, they'll look back and they'll talk about the historic things that were done this legislative session. So I'm really proud of what they've been able to do in a very tough environment, especially when you consider the tough choices that they had to make with the reduction in revenue. And so I'm really proud of what they were able to do and be a part of that.
Lieutenant Governor Kim Reynolds, thanks for your time.
Thank you. Thanks.